Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Jill Craig in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, July 11th, 2013. More deadly violence in Jonglei State is reported as South Sudan celebrates its second year of independence.
We heard that yesterday, the fight with the Murle, this fighting still continues until now.
And the government says it is taking action to keep out foreign workers without valid work permits.
We have been deporting people, especially at the foreigners, the border areas, when they are apprehended by our immigration officers and they don't have the legal document to allow them, they are sent back.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei state officials say fresh intertribal fighting has erupted in remote villages between the Luau Nuer and Morle. While there is no official confirmation of the number of casualties, some local leaders fear dozens could have been killed in the violence. For VOA, Manyang David Mayar has the story from Bor.
Local officials say the fighting started a week ago, but it is not clear what caused the violence. In a letter sent today to Jonglei State Governor Kwalma Nyang Juk, Pibor County Commissioner Joshua Konyi says the Luau Nuer youth first attacked Murle's village of Nanam last Friday. Commissioner Konyi says the fighting then spread to the villages of Agenat and Lilibok in Pibor County. Baba Maidan, a member of parliament representing Northern Pibor in Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, is accusing a prominent Luau Nuer spiritual leader, Doug Kweth, of leading the youth to attack the Murle villages.
We heard that yesterday, the fight with the Murle, this fighting still continues until now.
Maidan says the attackers are cattle raiders and the South Sudan Army has done nothing to stop the violence.
Lano al mahal dak bait.
Because the place is far and soldiers are in Lukwangule and they couldn't leave their base, they may encounter the enemy on the way. If there is no rebellion in the area, the army could move and calm the situation. So the clashes now only depend on who is powerful.
Just yesterday, the United States Embassy in South Sudan released a letter strongly criticizing the government of South Sudan for failing to protect people in Jonglei State against deadly cattle raids. Jonglei State Governor Kwalma Nyang Juk confirmed the latest tribal fighting in the state's remote villages. He says Murle civilians should seek shelter at SPLA bases.
I've been informed that the Luau Nuer youth have moved to the Murle land. But what can I do? The security forces cannot even go on foot. Because it is too wet now for them even to move. Cars cannot even move across, in the wetland. They will get stuck. They don't have helicopters to transport the forces and deter and retain the Luau Nuer. So there's nothing you can do. And I think the best is that those citizens, they move to where the SPLA forces are. They can move there for protection.
South Sudan Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguir says the SPLA has not received orders to intervene to stop the violence and says it is the civil authorities' responsibility to protect citizens.
Well, it has to come through the government because the SPLA implement the orders of the government. So if it is something related with the civil population, the army will not just do whatever they want to do without a clear instruction what to do. Because if there are two communities fighting, how do you separate people using firearms? Because this is a communal thing that requires the civil authority. It's a civil authority that should come up with the decision.
This latest round of violence comes just as South Sudan is celebrating its second anniversary of independence from Sudan. In May of 2012, the Luau Nuer, Murle and Dinga communities' tribal chiefs of Jonglei signed a peace agreement committing their communities to end the violence. In the U.S. Embassy letter, Washington urges leaders from the government and the community to call on all armed youth to lay down their weapons immediately and return to their homes. It also urges David Yao Yao's militia group and the SPLA to allow humanitarian groups to reach civilians and communities ravaged by violence. The SPLA continues to battle Yao Yao's rebels in Pibor County. Aid workers and rights groups have accused both the SPLA and Yau Yau rebels of abusing civilians and denying them access to humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Bor, Jonglei State.
South Sudan police officials confirm they are stepping up efforts to expel foreigners who are illegally working in the country. They say they want to make certain there are enough jobs to go around for South Sudanese who are looking for work. Bonifacio Taban reports for VOA from Bantu.
Beginning late last month, police force were instructed by the federal government official to begin warning foreigners that they need to get valid work permits or leave the countries. Police spokesperson Colonel James Monday in Okai said they will begin deporting illegal workers within 3 months. Monday said the move is consistent with government policies and is one way to reduce South Sudan's high unemployment rate, which according to the government is 14%.
So the foreigners come and they get jobs and they're working in, you know, in all the sectors, in building sector, business sector, restaurant, all this, you find them.
Monday doubled most foreign workers have obtained permit, the necessary work permit to hold this job, since there are many South Sudanese who could do the same work. He said the police also plan to deploy more force at border crossing point to check documentation, although he declined to say exactly how many more border police would be deployed.
We have been deporting people, especially at the foreigners, at the border areas, when they are apprehended by our immigration officers and they don't have the legal document to allow them. They are sent back. It's almost happening every day. But only that we are not publicizing the statistic.
Officials at the Ministry of Interior declined to comment on the subject or provide the number of foreigners deported so far this year or last year. The Sudan Tribune cite ministry statistics in reporting at least 2.5 million foreigners are currently working in the country illegally. Officials would not confirm that number. Reaction from foreign workers living in Bentiu is mixed. Francis Karanja arrived from Kenya looking for work in Bentiu a year ago. She agreed that most jobs should go to local people, but he said they either don't want them or South Sudanese don't have the skills.
The work which is for these people who are not learned, these manual works, they're supposed to be for the citizens, for the locals, not for us. Like me, I come from Kenya, all the way from there. I have to come to do something reasonable, wiring, what. Because these people of here, most of them, they don't have that knowledge.
Karanja said South Sudan need clerks and house cleaner, works that many locals are either not willing to do or don't know how to do. So foreigners should not be punished for taking them. Lona Mambishi, a Ugandan storekeeper who has lived in Bentiu for 6 months, said he does not know why the government is cracking down now. He said he was forced to go through a strict admission process to enter the country.
Someone should come according to what the passport it's telling, because it has its occupation and the work, because you should be worked. What are you going to do in Southern Sudan? I'm going to work in business. I'm going to be employed.
Both Karanja and Mombishi say since they have the proper documentation, they plan to stay in South Sudan and continue working. It remains to be whether a significant portion of the country's foreigners who are working here illegal will soon be deported. For VOA News, I'm Boniface Taban in Bentiu.
National Election Commission officials say they do not have enough money to conduct any of the elections that should take place later this year, including a long-overdue special election for the governor of Lake State. President Salva Kiir removed the elected governor of the state in January, and a special election was supposed to have been held within 60 days. Simon Casmiro has the story for VOA from Juba.
The chairman of the National Election Commission, Abednego Akok, says he is well aware the interim constitution requires elections to be held to fill both positions within 60 days. President Kiir fired elected Lake State's governor, Choltong Mayai, without explanation and replaced him with Matur Chot Duol. The president also sacked Unity State Governor Taban Dengai last weekend and appointed local party leader Joseph Nguyen Montuel to serve in his place. Akok says until the National Assembly approves the Commission's 45 million South Sudanese pound budget for the 2013 to 2014 fiscal year, no elections will take place.
We have presented the budget. It has been reduced, but we are lobbying so that it is raised to an appropriate figure which will allow the Commission to establish the Commission work.
Akok says the Commission's budget was slashed because of austerity measures, but without the full budget, he says officials will not be able to establish state-level election committees, purchase supplies like ballots, or train election officials. Minister of Justice John-Luc Jock called on lawmakers at a National Assembly hearing on the country's budget yesterday to include enough money for all scheduled elections, including those in Lakes and Unity states.
I hope in this the budget you will be discussing, there is money for them so that the National Election Commission is empowered, is resourced, and it can now conduct elections for the county councils, councillors, for the commissioners, for even those who are being removed from the state as governors, the caretaker governors, right, so that they don't continue indefinitely. They have to be elected.
The national budget was supposed to be approved by July 1st, the start of the country's fiscal year. The parliamentary officials say they expect a budget to be passed before the end of the month. Akok says there is no plan in place if the assembly does not approve the full amount. Lakes State Information Minister Dude McCoy Cork says they have received no official explanation from Juba for the delay.
It is not the state government to know or organize elections. What we do is to secure, to prepare the place for elections. But the conduct of elections, or the body that is supposed to conduct elections, is the Elections Commission.
He says the caretaker governor is prepared to remain in office for as long as it takes to schedule the vote, as required by the interim constitution. Simon Casmiro for VOA News in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a closer look at the causes of teen pregnancy on this World Population Day. Stay tuned.
Tell us what's on your mind. Fridays on South Sudan in Focus, we read from your comments. You can reach us by email or text message. Our email address is southsudan@voanews.com. Again, that's southsudan@voanews.com. Or you can text message us. The number in South Sudan is 09555-84407. From outside South Sudan, you have to dial the international code followed by 211-955-58-4407. Email or text messages. We want to know what is on your mind. Tune in on Fridays when we read from your comments.
Today is World Population Day, and this year's focus is on adolescent pregnancy. We'll have several reports for you on this topic. It's estimated that 16 million teenage girls give birth every year. Many are from countries in Africa or other developing nations. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The United Nations says many teenage girls suffer from complications during childbirth that lead to disability, sterility, or even death. No one knows for sure how many terminated their pregnancies through unsafe abortions. Dr. Akinyele Dairo is the Senior Program and Technical Advisor for Women's Reproductive Health at the UN Population Fund for the Africa region.
The issue of teenage pregnancy is a major problem for us in Africa. Africa is a youthful population. About 60% of the population in Africa is below the age of 24, which means when we talk about pregnancy, it's going to be an issue within that age group.
Dairo says there are several reasons for the high teen pregnancy rate in Africa.
Number one, not enough comprehensive sexuality education in schools, either because the teachers are not prepared or because it's not part of the curriculum. The second is that the parents are not well equipped and prepared to be able to train the young people on the issue of sexuality education. The third one is that those who are trained do not even have access to the services that will protect them from teenage pregnancy. And even where services are available in the health facilities, the healthcare providers are not friendly enough to encourage the young people to come to the service delivery points.
Another reason for teenage pregnancy is early marriage.
In many of the countries in Africa, by age 18, about 20 to 40% of the females are already married. And these are countries like Mauritania, Mali, like Niger, Chad, even in Ethiopia and Eritrea, where the issue of literacy and education is low, they tend to get married early.
Many girls are even taken out of school early by their parents and forced to marry young. When young girls become pregnant, their bodies may not be ready for the many changes that follow. And during childbirth, they are more vulnerable to infection or obstetric fistula, which is a hole or tear between the rectum and vagina. It can leave them incontinent and shunned by their community because of the odor. Dr. Dyro says there's an unknown number of teenage girls who want to end their pregnancies, but their options are limited.
In Africa, there are only two countries where abortion is legal. That is Tunisia and South Africa. These are two countries where a young person can go into a health facility to say that I don't want this pregnancy, I just want it terminated.
Some African countries allow abortions when the mother's life is at risk or in cases of rape or incest. The UN Population Fund official says many girls may have what he calls backdoor abortions. These may be performed by unqualified people or take place in ill-equipped or unsanitary conditions. The result can be bleeding, which can lead to death, or serious infections that can prevent them from ever getting pregnant again. Dyro says teens need to be much better informed about sexual health through youth-friendly health centers. He says they should be advised to delay sex until they are older or prepare to protect themselves from unwanted pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases. And he says they should stay in school. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says when attention and resources are devoted to the education, health, and well-being of adolescent girls, they will become an even greater force for positive change in society for generations to come. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
As we've just heard, international organizations are calling attention to the problems caused by adolescent pregnancy, which include extremely high school dropout rates. And it's a big problem, particularly in South Sudan. Officials in eastern Equatoria tell VOA's Philip Alou that dropout rates for girls there are as high as 70% in some parts of the state. The main reason? Girls are getting pregnant at young ages.
Cecily Opio, the senior woman teacher at Pula Secondary School, says during her first year at the school, adolescent marriage was a serious problem.
I realized it in the beginning, especially in 2006, the populations of girls in Pula SS was 106, but reaching the end of the year, the population dropped to 86.
She says she has seen that number reduce drastically over time.
There is a great improvement, especially in this year. We have 137 girls in term one, but when we came back in term two, the population remained as it is. So I think things are moving ahead, especially in our area.
She credits recent nationwide school program that encouraged girls to delay marriages and pregnancy and finish their education. But the Fula Secondary School successes have not been copied across the rest of eastern Equatoria. Michael Ofuke, the State Minister of Education, says in rural areas, the secondary school dropout rate for girls can be as high as 70%. In urban areas like Numuli, it is still about 50%. He says the vast majority of these girls drop out because of early marriages, which lead to adolescent pregnancy. Vondro Gift, a medical officer at Alpha Clinic in Numuli, says he sees at least 5 pregnant young women between 16 and 19 years old every month. It says local cultural traditions, including high dowry prices, encourage parents to have their daughters marry at a young age. Nearly half of all young women between 15 and 19 years old are married, according to government statistics. Gifty says even if girls marry young, they can still finish their education. The problem is most of them don't choose their route, and they get pregnancy in the first year of marriages because the community prones upon birth control.
But we in the clinic, we are trying to advise them such that in the future, they will change their attitude. It needs a slow process. But we are trying to advise them such that they come to the modern situation. And others, they are accepting the attention of what we are supposed to do. But those ones in the village, obviously, they're neglecting.
He says the government and NGOs must focus on changing traditional community attitudes about early child marriages and birth control if they want to reduce the number of adolescent pregnancies. For BOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Numuli.
As we mark World Population Day, the UN estimates that the global population will increase to 9 billion people by the year 2050. Meanwhile, a staggering number of people go hungry every day, while an almost equal number suffer from chronic health problems due to obesity. Many international groups are committed to looking into solutions. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with one organization that pointed out an often overlooked group of people who play a major role in solving these problems.
The world's population is rapidly increasing, and along with this growth, many problems that have plagued mankind for years remain major obstacles to conquer. Many groups and organizations have devoted their entire efforts on finding solutions to problems such as hunger, obesity, gender inequality, and a lack of knowledge regarding reproductive health. But one organization said a major link in solving these problems centers on women. Danielle Nuremberg, co-founder of the Chicago-based think tank Food Tank, said one of the biggest unmet challenges in the developing world is the need for contraception and reproductive health.
There are more than 200 million women worldwide who don't have access to contraception, which prevents them from planning how many children they want to have and when. I think that's really the biggest challenge, that we're still not able to meet the needs of women and families around the world.
What are needed, said Nuremberg, are programs and projects that focus on empowering women and that also allow them to have access to education and other resources that are available to men.
Along with that, we need to educate men and boys and girls about the need for family planning so that when families are making these decisions, they're making them together, that men are not just telling women when they should have children and how many. I think the solution to a lot of the issues that we're seeing in terms of population growth could really be alleviated by educating women and families about reproductive health and sexual health.
Another challenge facing our growing population centers on food sustainability. Currently, there are between 870 million and 1.3 billion people in the world who do not get enough to eat. On the other hand, about 1.4 billion people are overweight, which equates to a myriad of chronic health problems for them, such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease.
Our food system has been good at filling people up with calories, but not very good at nourishing them. So the more that we can focus on nutrient-dense foods and nutritious foods and move away from investment in starchy staple crops that, you know, are very good, again, at producing calories, but can lead to both malnutrition and obesity, we really need to change that paradigm and start focusing on foods that actually nourish people.
In developing countries, women make up a large part of the agricultural labor force. For example, in sub-Saharan Africa, women make up 80% of smallholder farmers. In other parts of the world, women make up 20% of this workforce. However, Nuremberg emphasized these women do not have access to such resources as land, credit, and financial services.
But if women had the same access to those things, according to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, global malnutrition could be reduced by anywhere from 12 to 17%. So the answer is very simple. Invest in women and we'll make a lot of headway on reducing malnutrition and some of the other problems that the world faces.
Nuremberg pointed out that problems such as hunger, obesity, gender issues, and a lack of reproductive health are not standalone issues, so their solutions should be integrated. She said the question is how to integrate education and women's empowerment into the solutions that will also address agricultural problems. She added that women should have a role in finding these answers.
And you see many organizations taking this on because they've realized that if they're not investing in women, if women aren't a comprehensive part of every project that's being implemented in the developing world, then it's all for naught. So the real need for incorporating gender and mainstreaming gender into every agriculture or development project is really the way forward.
The Food Tank co-founder stated it has taken too long to realize the vital role women play in solving these issues, but she pointed out that progress is being made.
I spent a lot of time on the ground, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa over the last couple of years, talking to farmers groups and women's groups, scientists and researchers. And women's groups are often at the forefront of projects, you know, whether they're alleviating hunger or helping to find ways to reduce poverty. Women's groups have been very active and powerful in this space. And I think, again, if we recognize the contributions that they're making, like agriculture groups often have a hard time finding the investment and the attention that they need to be replicated and scaled up on a bigger scale.
Nuremberg emphasized the importance of the multiple roles women play in society, especially in the developing world, must be a part of the solution to the present and future challenges of a growing population. I'm Kim Lewis reporting from Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Jill. Egypt's interim leaders are continuing work on forming a government amid objections from political parties about how the country is proceeding following the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi. Interim Prime Minister Hazim El Biblawi is weighing political and potential cabinet picks today, with Mr. Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood rejecting any role and criticizing arrest warrants issued yesterday for its leaders. Egypt's top prosecutor ordered the arrest of Brotherhood chief Mohammed Badia, one of his deputies, and eight others. A Moscow court has convicted dead lawyer Sergei Magnitsky of tax evasion, concluding a posthumous trial in a case that strained U.S.-Russian ties. Magnitsky, in his work with Hermitage Capital Management, the largest Western investment firm operating in Russia, accused Russian law enforcement and tax officials of taking part in a scheme by which they fraudulently received refunds for taxes. And finally, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden made a forceful call for China to stop cyber theft during annual talks between the two world powers in Washington. Biden said China must end the outright theft of intellectual property, which recent reports say has cost the U.S. hundreds of billions of dollars a year. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song No More War by Raz Corby.
Just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Sure, Rastafari, to stop the war. No more war in Africa, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia, we gotta keep it nice and neat, Jah. Our people suffering around the world today, they're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide, not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world without love? So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way, they need someone to turn to. Only Jah has the solution, no mankind has it on his own. We were creating the image and the likeness of Jah. Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun now. And even times the rain will fall. Can you tell me what the mystical vibration you see?
We've been listening to No More War by Raz Corby. I'm Jill Craig in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
People are fighting to peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah.